Hi, and welcome to the Send Mum Club podcast. I am your host, Gemma, and this is the parenting podcast with a difference. And I have now officially been saying that for a whole year. So happy birthday to me. Well, happy birthday to the podcast, because of course it launched this time last year on World Down Syndrome Day, which is the 21st of March. And I can't believe it's been a year. I have had some absolutely incredible guests on, and I have learned so much in the last year. So thank you to you if you have been one of those guests. Thank you to you if you have just listened. Thank you if you've ever sent a message of encouragement or any kind of feedback. I really do appreciate all of it. And as always, if you would like to be a guest on the Send Mum Club podcast, please slide into my DMs. I'd absolutely love that. So many of my guests have done that, and then they've ended up being brilliant episodes. So if you aren't already following, I am at the Send Mum Club on Instagram. What a year it's been, and what a week it's been since I was last chatting to you. Oh my God, Leo, my little boy, is 3, if you're a new listener. He has Down syndrome, which was the reason for starting this podcast. And he has tonsillitis. Hopefully by the time this goes out, my God, please let the tonsillitis have gone. Now, he's had many worse things than tonsillitis before, but he's just never been this ill. He's just so poorly. Like, he is always so cheerful. He's one of those kids that if we've ever had to go to A&E, I'm like, he's really ill. And he's sat there smiling and waving at everyone. And you're like, don't do that right now. And that's such a lovely quality. But honestly, now he is just, it's absolutely taken him out. He's barely eaten. He is just feeling really sorry for himself. He doesn't want to play. He doesn't want to do anything. And he's just cried and cried and cried. And it is hard when they're sick, isn't it? But I'm going to manifest that by the time this goes out, the illness, the germs, the fact that I feel like I'm getting it will have left this house and everything will be back to normal. Right, on to this week's guest, Liz. And I loved this chat with her. So Liz is somebody that I think I found through Instagram, and I wanted to get her on because her little boy Henry has a really, really rare genetic condition, and it's even more rare in boys. Henry has a CASC gene mutation. Now Liz explains what that means and how it affects her little boy in this episode, because again, like so many diagnoses and genetic conditions, it affects everybody in different ways. We talk about the challenges of your child having such a rare condition and not having that opportunity to kind of reach out and find your tribe of people who are going through exactly the same thing as you. Liz and I have a really interesting chat about carers that Henry has and how, although yes, that is very helpful, how difficult she found it to hand over control, and actually still is finding it difficult to hand over control to carers and completely be able to relax, especially at night time. We also talk quite a lot about sharing the load, and I mean that in terms of the mental load, the admin, the appointments, all of it, because I would say probably 9 times out of 10, that will fall to mums. And Liz and her husband are doing it a little bit differently, and it was such an interesting chat, and it was really refreshing to hear somebody talk about breaking those stereotypes, and I love that. I hope you find that as interesting as I did. And Liz also talks about how she has managed to go back to work despite Henry having such complex medical needs. So there's lots we cover in this chat. I think you're really going to like it. Let's get into it. Liz, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Hello.
I've just looked back through our messages, and I mean, I've had to reschedule this an embarrassing amount of time.
Me too. Don't worry. That's fine.
But you know what? When I rescheduled you literally today, as I was sitting in A&E in Alder Hey with my child who can't eat or drink currently because he's so poorly, I actually said to my husband as I was messaging you, do you know what the nice thing is about this podcast is that everyone gets it. Like, people have cancelled on me numerous times, and I'm like, ah, it's fine. We'll find a date. And now we're here.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking the same thing. It must be so hard to get 2 people together at the same time.
Yeah, I know. I know. Right. So you are here, Liz, to talk about your son, Henry, who is gorgeous. I've just been stalking your Instagram, and he's so cute. He's 4, isn't he?
Yeah, he just turned 4 at Christmas. Yeah.
So just before we get into the ins and outs of everything, what is he like as a little boy? Like, what is he into?
Ooh, it's a tricky one. I think, so now at the moment, he's really into Paw Patrol, we think.
Love.
He used to be sort of really Hey Doggy obsessed and a bit of Bluey. But recently we tried him in Paw Patrol and he absolutely loves that. We just went away for a week and we couldn't access any Paw Patrol for some reason. And as soon as we got home, his little face was lighting up when he went on the TV. So that was super cute.
Maybe I need to try some Paw Patrol. We're like exclusively Bluey, literally nothing else.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I was like, I cannot spend the rest of my life watching Hey Doggy and Bluey. I have to try something new. So yeah, we just gave it a go. And so far, so good. So yeah, he loves a bit of Paw Patrol.
Well, genuinely, when I come off this recording, Leo's downstairs with my husband. I might try him with Paw Patrol because he has, not only is he obsessed with Bluey, he has now been narrowed down to one episode. And I'm
which one is it?
So it's called Space, where Mackenzie goes into the black hole. So Leo calls it Black Hole, and it's just constantly, watch Black Hole, watch Kenzie. And I'm like, if I have to watch Kenzie one more time, I'm going to lose my mind.
To be fair, I have some favourites as well, and I do sort of pick those ones. But yeah, one is too little for sure.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing was too little, and now it's got even worse. So let's talk about Henry's diagnosis. So he has a CASC gene mutation. Have I said that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. So for those that don't know, and I will hold my hands up and say I'm one of them, and I'm always a bit reticent to Google because so much outdated information on everything. So I thought, you know what? I actually won't Google. I'll just get you to explain exactly what that is and what that means for Henry.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's tricky because it means it's different for every single child. And I think we did the same thing when we got the diagnosis. We started Googling it and fell down a black hole.
Yeah.
I won't try and pronounce what it stands for because each of the letters stands for a different thing. But essentially, it's like a genetic condition which is based on something that Henry's body cannot produce. So he cannot produce the CAS protein, and it's X-linked. So you and I have both got 2 CAS proteins because we're women, and Henry only has 1. And his mutation, it's a misspelling. So part of his genetic code is spelled incorrectly. But it's happened quite early on, essentially, which means that he's really quite severely affected. So his body basically doesn't produce any of this CAS protein. When I say protein, that seems to simplify it. So I'll just say CAS gene. And that gene is responsible for basically like brain and body development. Like it is so, so important. So it just means that his body just cannot produce it and does not produce it. And then there's just a whole multitude of different sort of things that come alongside with CASC. So MICPCH, so basically small head and like cerebral function. And then it's too scientific, to be honest, for me to explain. And he also has things like nystagmus in his eyes, epilepsy, hypo and hypertonia, dystonia, and all these things. A lot of the children, a lot of the people that have the mutation, they have it in different like levels of severity. And the boys are always much, much, much more severely affected because it is X-linked. And there's far, far fewer boys. When we got Henry's diagnosis, we were given 2 massive, massive like printouts from the internet of, here's something to read that, you know, some researcher has done on your child's condition. And it was like, there are 7 boys in the world with CASC. I can't remember how many it was back then.
Wow.
X number have died. They were this age. We were basically told, you know, this condition is fatal in boys. Most of them don't make it through pregnancy. Most of them don't make it through childbirth. So well done. Great. But it's unlikely that he'll have a long life. It's unlikely, you know, he might not live till he's 1 year old. And that really stuck in our head. We were like, whoa. Whereas it does affect the girls very, very differently, but still very severely. So I think Henry is very different to any other child that I've met or, you you know, I've known from online mostly with the same condition as him. So they're all just so unique, basically.
You said that you were told that he might not live past the age of one. Now, I'm not going to ask how that felt, because that's, I would imagine, the worst thing that a parent can hear. But given that he's just turned four, how do you feel about being told that in hindsight, looking back? Because that, I would imagine, I mean, that's going to affect your entire journey as a mum to him, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I've never really thought about that, you know, and it completely threw us. And he was only 4 months old when we got that diagnosis. And it was almost the summer holidays, so it's like April. So both me and my husband were like, whoa, oh my gosh, okay, we need to make the next 6 months of his life or the next 10 months the best. Like, we need to just give him as many opportunities as we can. So we did. We were like, right, we're going to take him on a boat. We're going to take him to Cornwall and Devon. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And we did. And then I remember on his first birthday, which is Christmas Day. So it's a crazy day to have a birthday in itself, just feeling like, oh my God, we made it. Like, he's here. He's won. And now I think the only time I reference that is, I guess it's almost like a trauma that comes back. But actually, I'm like, look at him. He's four. He's achieved so much more than the neurologist that gave us a diagnosis suggested. And she'd never heard of the condition before she met Henry either. And every time we're in hospital and we see her, which is often, she's always amazed at how he's doing. And I'm always showing her all the videos of, let me show you him doing this. Let me show you him laughing. Let me show you him, you know, watching Paw Patrol or getting grumpy. So I feel like, I don't know. It's just, I'm just proud of him for what he's done and achieved based on what people's expectations were. And now I don't have an age in my head of like what he could, you know, how long he could live for, because being in the community of other parents who have children with the condition, there are people who are in their 20s, I think maybe 30s. Again, everyone's so differently affected. So I'm just like, it's an open book. You just don't know.
I feel you with the everyone is affected differently, because to an extent, Down syndrome's the same. But I am able to find other families who are affected by it in a similar way to in which Leo is. But it must be really difficult to not be able to find that. You know, we always say comparison is the thief of joy, but sometimes comparison can be really helpful, because somebody gets what you're going through and it can give you a little glimmer of hope into the future. It must be really hard to not be able to find that.
Because I don't think there is that. And I think, you know, as when we did find out his diagnosis, I remember trawling through Facebook and Instagram, every boy mom that I could find, I spoke to. And unfortunately, in that time, some of the boys have passed away, or the mums that I reached out to, their child had died very, very young. Or when I found out a little bit more about their child, because we were just chatting freely, and I guess you can ask all the tricky questions because we're, you know, going through a similar thing. The majority of the boys that I met, or, you know, found the parents that were online, they have, it's been passed down their mutation from their parents, which means that it's often, I don't know what the word is. The mutation is more severe if it's de novo, which is what Henry has. So Henry is a de novo one. So I don't think I know many people. There is a boy who's really similar age to Henry. We don't live that far away. Me and his mum chat quite a lot. We've never met. And I think it's scary to me, because we'll sit there going and comparing the two. And that's just so hard. But I think meeting a lot of other mums at Henry's Children's Hospice when he was quite little was amazing at playgroup. Because even though all of our children had completely different conditions, in a way that was better because then we didn't compare. But, you know, two of the kids had epilepsy, so we talk about meds. Two of the kids had dystonia, so we talk about what the triggers were. And it was then just like information sharing and not comparison. And I think at the moment, that's the sort of like camp that I feel really comfortable in. And maybe in the future, I'll be, you know, introducing Henry to his other friends with the same condition. That being said, the school that we're hoping he goes to, there's a little girl who has the same condition. So you never know. That could be really exciting.
Can I just say, I'm so sorry that that is the experience that you've had in terms of reaching out to other people, because I guess when you reach out to somebody else, you're looking, I mean, let's be honest, we've all done it. You're looking for reassurance. You're looking for somebody to say, actually, this isn't as bad as you think. And here's this really positive story that you almost want to cling on to. So I just want to kind of acknowledge, I'm really sorry that you had the opposite experience of that. And that must have been really difficult.
It is really hard. But then maybe thinking more broadly, now there are more younger boys and I'm in touch with their parents and Henry's older. So I hope that I can give them a bit of a glimmer from Henry's story. But equally, it might not be. You don't know, do you?
If they have been given a similar kind of trajectory that you were, then you definitely will be giving somebody hope.
Because he's four.
Because he's four. And that's a huge, that's huge.
I never thought about that either.
So I think you are definitely doing something that will be really comforting to people by, you know, sharing your story with them and you know, sharing your story on this podcast as well. So thank you. What initially led to Henry's diagnosis?
So when he was born, basically, we didn't know. My pregnancy was completely sort of, I guess, normal, but I have nothing to compare it against because Henry's my first child. So gave birth on Christmas morning, 5:53 in the morning. And I remember not hearing him cry. But then pretty much immediately after I'd given birth, I basically lost so much blood that I was just out of it. They put him on my chest for what I think was seconds, basically. And then they did a crash call for me. So they gave Henry to my husband and he was just cuddling up there. And I was, there's a video of me sort of trying to look over and I just looked like, oh. So they'd done a crash call for me. And then I think it was about half an hour later. This is all secondhand because I wasn't really like compos mentis. They weighed him and he started shaking and his hands were shaking like this, like he was drumming. And we were like, oh, my husband said he's like a little drummer boy. And he was actually, they were like, yeah, can you record this? So he started recording it. So we've got the video that shows him doing it. And then you can hear the nurse saying, yeah, let's do a crash call. So then they took him straight into NICU. God. They said to me, because they were still doing stuff to me, and they're like, we're going to do another crash call. This time it's for your boy. It makes me feel really sad. And I just remember him going out in the little incubator and thinking, oh my gosh, what the hell has just happened? Like, madness. And we basically were just, I guess, like, had no idea of what, it could be anything at this point. It could be like, because we were in a NCT group and some of the babies had gone into NICU for a really short period of time because they'd like swallowed their own feces, and that was quite obviously, it's very serious. And I was like, oh, it could be that. So it wasn't until basically probably a few days into him being in NICU when they'd done all these preliminary tests, because at first they were thinking, oh, it could be potassium markers or this marker or this, he maybe just needs a bit of this. And he had an MRI and that didn't show anything crazy on the MRI, but he wasn't feeding. And it was really obvious. But again, we had no clue, like, that the doctors were just wondering what the heck is going on. And we were in NICU and special care for 28 days. And basically the first week was all investigations with nothing really found. And he had jaundice for a while as well. And then the last sort of 3 weeks were basically just trying to teach him to feed because he had an NG, which we, you know, we worked quite hard to get him to feed. And by 8 weeks old, he did actually get rid of his NG for a while. And it wasn't until 3 months later when we had a 12-week appointment with neurology. Well, we'd been told we had this appointment and back then we never, like, I'd literally never been to hospital in my life before I had Henry, at all. And we went to that appointment and they were like, no, there's no appointment for Henry. And we're like, no, it's 12:30 this day. We've literally had it in the calendar because we took him home and we were like, we'll just love him better. He's just had a really hard start. Maybe the birth was just too much for him. Like, maybe something went wrong. Like, maybe we need to look into that. Like, we'll just love him better. And literally for the next 12 weeks, my husband and I were like, you know. And then when we got to that appointment, I think other people around us definitely noticed more than we did about him having quite a small head. And he was like, he used to get crazy sweaty. Like, he would drench himself in sweat, which we put down to, you know, he's just working really hard to drink milk. So let's just pull back on that. And yeah, so long story short, the 12-week appointment wasn't actually an appointment. There was nothing there. But then a neurologist sort of was walking down the corridor and he was quite a senior member of the team and saw us and sort of overheard. And it was his lunch break. And he was like, come into my office. Because he just looked at Henry and was like, you know, did a few tests and then said, okay, I can't even remember what he said. But I remember by the time we got home, and we were carrying him into the house, had a phone call saying we'd like to bring him in tomorrow and admit him because we need to do some tests. Like, there's definitely something going on. Can you come in at 7 a.m.? And I'm like, whoa, okay, so this is quite serious, isn't it? And then we spent 10 days in hospital where they just did all the tests again and the full genome sequencing. And yeah, that was a horrible time, like horrible, horrible 10 days because I was 3 months postpartum and had retained placenta as well. So I had to have their surgery because I was didn't realise that shouldn't still have been bleeding 12 weeks later. And they were like, did loads of tests. Oh, yeah, you've got retained placenta. So I had to go and have a surgery. And this all then happened within like a week of that. So it was just mad. I don't think my husband and I really sort of admitted to ourselves that it was going to be something. Like, I remember us trying to have those conversations, but then being like, let's not go down that road. Let's just keep doing our routine. Like, because I was like trying to, I was trying to feed him every 3 hours, but I was also pumping my milk so he could have my milk. So it was like an hour of pumping milk, then an hour of feeding, and then an hour of sleep. And then literally it was madness. So I don't think we really saw reality, and then it suddenly hit us when we had all these tests. And we sort of had that 10 days. They then discharged us and they were like, oh, it could be 8 weeks. So we're like, right, let's just get on with life, like, let's just carry on as normal. But it was only 5 weeks when they called us in, and then, you know, we found out the diagnosis. Yeah, it's just a crazy time. Like, oh, and in that time we'd also decided to have a loft conversion, which we paid for before the pregnancy, before the baby, before Henry came. So the loft conversion started when he was like 15 weeks old. And so we were living in a tiny room in one part of the house. And yeah, it was just mad. Like, looking back, just absolutely madness. But we were like zombies as well. So we just carried on every day. Almost still are, I think, 4 years later, to be honest with you.
I think getting, you know, I've been there with the whole, you know, postpartum in hospital genetic testing. And I think I always say, I think it would be really difficult to cope with that if you were starting from base level, but having just had a baby and your hormones are all over the place and you're breastfeeding. And like you were saying, you were pumping. So was I. You're like just on this constant cycle of, like, you know, with your boobs out, trying to get some sleep. Now the baby's crying, now I'm doing this. And on top of that, waiting for potentially life-changing news.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot. And then the loft conversion, I'm not going to lie, that would have tipped me over the edge.
Yeah. We had the best builder in the world. He was so lovely, actually. Oh. And I remember that. He would like stay late because he knew, you know, he knew what we were going through.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Henry had his NG, so Henry was really visibly not a well baby as well.
Yeah. How did you feel when you got that diagnosis?
I remember really weird things about it. Like, I remember the room. I remember what I was wearing. I remember the temperature. I remember that an air ambulance was landing, so I couldn't hear for part of the diagnosis. It was in April, but it was boiling. I remember feeling really like sticky and uncomfortable. I remember like the neurologist going to wash her hands and saying something crazy like, yeah, like, because I think we were wanting to know all the facts, like, rather than it sinking in, we were like, tell us the facts, like, we can deal with the facts. Like, I remember him saying, will he go to school, will he walk, will he talk? And it was like a unlikely, you know. And then I don't think any of that sunk in. And then I remember them saying, and we still work with this team now, like, regularly, there's a room next door, would you like to go and sit in that room just to, you know, take everything in? And I was like, no, get me the hell out of this hospital right now. And I've been back into that same room once since then, just for a different appointment. And I've just felt like, oh, I don't want to go in here. Like, I feel just, you know, I know exactly where that room is. And then there's a park next to the hospital, and we just went into that park and we just walked around it. And I think I just cried. And I was just like, yeah, what the hell has just happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny the things you remember, isn't it? Mm. I don't remember anything specific like you do about our diagnosis, but I remember that room. And I know that if we ever got asked to go into that room again, I'd be like, I'm sorry, you're going to have to find us somewhere else. Because I wouldn't.
Maybe I should say that from now on, actually. Yeah.
I don't think I'd. I feel very different to how I did then, but I know it would bring up a lot because you immediately get taken back, I would imagine, yeah, going back into that space.
And that's just unnecessary. You don't need to do that to yourself.
No.
Like, there's no need. Yeah. I'd rather have the appointment in the waiting room.
Where, you know. No, I know exactly what you mean. We'll have it outside.
We actually went up to visit my mum, who lives up north in Lancashire. And we just went walking because, like, we put Henry in the sling and we went to, like, places that we loved. And we just literally walked and went to nice pubs and sat there and were like, let's take him to, you know, all the lovely places that we enjoy. And I think we had like a week, I think it was a week, to like almost decompress and then be like, what the hell has just happened? I don't think it actually worked in that week, but it was definitely a good idea. And we got so many cute pictures. And but I remember, you know, looking back now at those pictures, I can see that there's so much like sadness in me taking those pictures. Like, could this be the last time? Like, we also had to tell my stepdaughter, and that was an incredibly hard thing to sort of think about how to do it. And we took quite a bit of advice from the children's hospice. And
how old is she?
I think I rang someone as well. She's 14 now. So she was 10.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can't remember. I think we like rang a charity and I spoke to them and I was like, what advice do you have? Like, because we didn't know what the diagnosis meant really. And we were just like, and I think I was also thinking like, it can't be, if you're, you know, you're a 10-year-old, going to have so many questions, but you're going to be scared to ask those questions because they're horrible questions. And I just remember sitting on the bed with her and I think we did a good job, but we'll see. Maybe one day I'll ask her.
I'm sure you did. I think just by you saying that you asked for advice and, you know, contacting a charity, I think I feel confident by you saying that you did do a good job.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
But that's obviously an incredibly hard conversation to have. I'd imagine if she's anything like my daughter when she was 10, she's just like, oh my God, I'm getting a baby brother. You know, all that excitement.
Cuddles, basically. Yeah. Cuddles. Yeah.
What does an average day look like for you now with Henry?
Routine is something that we have not achieved yet. Like, I absolutely crave boring routine. Like, I think it's a luxury. Like, I was thinking that the other day. So our days are different depending on the time of year and how Henry is. And I'm now working, so I went back to work when Henry was 18 months old. But now I'm working a lot more since October. I'm sort of working almost like 4 or 3 days a week. So normal days, it depends basically. We now have night care for Henry, which we are still sort of sorting out, getting it all up and running. So we applied four times, I think, for continuing care, for night care. And then suddenly when he turned three, it was like all the work I'd done, like I'd written an 18-page document with hyperlinked things saying this is why we need it. Suddenly it was like, yep, yeah, you can have it. But and he's now four. We've not quite got seven nights yet. But so we have carers at night who are still learning a lot of the needs that Henry has, which is nice. So it means that I do get a bit of sleep now. But it's a very new thing. We sort of set that up from about November, December. And then we've got a puppy. So I'm starting to always, well, a dog. He's not a puppy anymore. He's the best thing that we ever did, to be fair with you. And the mornings now, get Henry up, get him in front of Paw Patrol, give him his breakfast. Depending on whether he's, you know, got anything, he's got nursery or something. And then I'll take the dog for a walk. And that's sort of my time of the day to be like, okay, what have I got to achieve today? What have I got to do? Who do I need to voice note? What emails do I need to send? Which I shouldn't be doing while I'm walking the dog. I should just be enjoying the nature. But, you know, at the moment, Henry isn't going to nursery because he was so, so unwell in the autumn. We just couldn't risk it. Like, he went into respiratory failure and was almost intubated with it. He was like seconds away from it, basically. And we've just had a week of therapy away in Lanzarote. And so we were like, we need to keep him healthy so we can go to Lanzarote and enjoy ourselves. So a lot of the time he's been at home, which then is like a big long day of, right, how do I entertain a child who has extremely limited mobility, extremely limited communication, but if he gets fed up, if he's unhappy, that will then lead to a huge sort of medical storm of dystonia or epilepsy. So there's a lot of trying to like read what he's in the mood for. And my husband is Henry's main carer now that I'm working. So he's pretty good at sort of deciding, right, we're going to do an hour of this and then half an hour of this. And he goes to like vision therapy once a week, physio once a week. We try and take him swimming. Appointments. There's always appointments. I've got about four this week. They always happen at once. So there's never really like a routine, if I'm honest with you. But the things that we do have to do as a routine, actually, are his chest physio, which is just intense and is so not what you want to do. So he has to have a nebulizer with 15 minutes of chest physio every single morning and every single evening. And he's meant to have it at lunchtime as well. But we simply cannot fit it in with all of his food and everything. And then we do another nebulizer with an antibiotic in it because he's got this long-term sort of underlying condition in his lungs. And that process pretty much takes 45 minutes. And that is just grim, to be honest with you. So my husband and I was like, right, who's doing it today? I'm like, oh, I'm walking the dog. I'm already out the door. And then he has to do it. Or we can get one of our carers to come in the morning to do it. That's even better. Because then I sort of realized a while back when we were doing the continuing care, I was like, I used to want to hold everything and do everything. And I literally would never put Henry down. I would never let anyone cuddle him. I would do all the meds. I would do all the ordering for the pharmacy. It was me who did all the emails, everything. I just held everything. And it was like a control thing. Like, if I can control it, I can create calm and peace. And then a few things changed where I realized this isn't going to be sustainable. Like, going to work. Also my husband being like, let me do stuff. Like, you're always saying you're exhausted, but you're not letting me do stuff. And I don't have that knowledge in my brain. So then you have a go at me because I do it wrong, but that's because you've been doing it for so long. And I'm like, oh yeah. So that's been, I guess, a good process for me to sort of say, I'm working now. I'm starting work at 8:30, finishing at like whatever time. I've got a few bits in my lunch, like for lunch, but I just want to play with Henry then or sit and read him a story. I don't want to have to do meds. I don't want to have to do, if I have to suction him, I have to suction him. But do you see what I mean? Like, for me, I'm really trying to be mum now rather than like nurse and mum, because it's not nice. Like, and it's just not enjoyable to have to do all the horrible medical stuff every single day.
I think it's really refreshing actually to hear that that's how you and your husband are working it, because I would say, I mean, I'm going to pluck a number out of the air here. I would say probably 90% of the caring responsibilities with a child with additional needs or a medically complex child would normally fall to the mum. And actually, I think it's really nice to hear that you're doing that differently. Can I ask, because actually it wasn't your Instagram, I can't actually think whose it was. I saw somebody the other day saying that they had just been given night carers. And she was saying that she was really, kind of what you've just said, really struggling that idea of letting I'm so sorry, because I'm sure it's someone I follow and interact with, and I can't remember who it was that posted it. But I'd be really interested to know how you found that, because I will preface this by saying sleep is so important. Like, you can't physically function properly or mentally be stable in any way if you're sleep deprived. So I completely understand that there must be a huge part that feels like, oh my God, I can sleep. This is amazing. But how did you find that letting go and letting somebody else look after him in the nighttime?
I mean, that's a really good point, because it is about letting go. And I think so many processes over time have been about letting go, like not looking after him all day. The night thing, we're still not there, if I'm honest with you. So I've still got his cot next to our bed. I've not moved it because he had to move into his own room for us to have night carers, because Henry does not cry. So since he started having epilepsy, he's almost mute. So he has to be right next to us. So that was the biggest thing for me, like the proximity. And I think the first couple of nights we sort of sat in bed and we looked at each other and we were like, we can't hear him breathing, because we literally have spent 3.5 years trying to listen all night to him breathing to make sure he's sleeping and okay. The other thing is, we've really struggled that Henry's needs are really in between. Like, really, he should have a qualified nurse looking after him because of the amount of like very deep, effective suctioning that he needs. In our area, none of the carers are trained to do that. So all of our carers that we've got, we've got two at the moment, are not, they've been trained, but they've never really actually had a period where Henry's been unwell and he's been at home and they've had to do lots of the medical stuff. Most of the time they're doing sort of nappy changes, comforting him, giving meds, giving milk. And we have a doorbell at the end of Henry's cot that they can ring so that we can come down if they need us in the night if he's not well. And I literally say to them, my threshold for ringing that doorbell is so low, please ring me. And I know sleep is crucial, but I'm not ready to sort of fully trust in that. I think it is trust. It's not just let go, it's trust. Somebody else look after Henry, because he can't communicate what's going on. He's so hard to read, but my husband and I, we can read him like that because he's grown up, you know, around us, obviously. And yeah, it is really hard. And then when we have a few nights a week, I don't even know if we've had 7 nights yet. That's what I mean. Like, we don't have any routine. Like, Henry's going back to nursery on Wednesday for the first time since September. And I'm like, hospital is looming. Like, you know, it's just not going to happen. So when we have a night where we don't have a carer, I sleep on Henry's floor, or my husband does. But a lot of the time I do, because I just can't sleep up in our bedroom. Like, I just lay awake. So I'm like, I might as well do it. And I really love it because I'm back with him, but I have a terrible sleep. So I know how important the night care is. Like, it is so crucial. And training the people around Henry is so important, and having a really good team, because it is letting me be me a little bit more. I think there was a moment a couple of months, like maybe about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I woke up and I was like, I've got a bit of energy. And I went for the walk with Reggie, the dog, and was like, I'm like listening to the birds, like the sun's coming out. I'm like enjoying myself. Like, I'm feeling happy. And I'm feeling good. Like, I'm feeling like I can tackle the day. I'm not feeling stressed by it all. And I think that is the main thing that I've got out of it, is that a bit more of me is coming back, or the new me, whatever that is, because my brain is resting and my body is resting. And so it's allowing myself to sort of enjoy things a bit more. But I remember talking to my friends from our children's hospice, whose children are similar age, actually. There's a group of us with similar age boys. And some of them have had night care since the very beginning. And they were always like, Liz, just do it. Like, why are you dragging your heels? Like, come on. And there's other things now that I'm still not doing. They're like, come on, Liz, like, you just need to do it. And I don't want to let go. And I just think you've got to wait until it's the right time, or it feels like the right time, or you feel so exhausted that you're like, I need it now. Because you just know that the care isn't going to get any easier. It's just going to get harder as they get bigger and, you know, more things become more and more difficult and you just get more and more tired.
I think it's interesting what you said, though, about, you know, going for a walk and just being present and hearing the birds and stuff, because that must also be because your situation now is moving you closer to, obviously not all the time, but having times where you can just be Henry's mum rather than Henry's carer. Because I suppose you're, do you work out of your house?
I work at home. So yeah, I'm always at home.
Either way, you're working, aren't you? So then you are Henry's mum who is working rather than being there 100% of the time full on. And I've spoken to a few other mums whose children have really complex medical needs. And they've said the same thing about that, wanting to be a mum, not just a carer. Because like you said, with all of the appointments and the chest physio, and again, I've spoken to mums before who have to do chest physio and they've said the same thing, like it's a lot, it takes such a long time. And then that with the feeding, it doesn't really give you that much other time to enjoy things, does it?
Yeah, I completely agree, actually. And it's funny because when I applied for this job back in September, I actually interviewed for a summer teacher. I interviewed for a job in a school and I got out my old like interview dresses from before I was pregnant. I was like, God, these were nice. Didn't really fit me, but just about did. And I remember walking down the road, full hair, like makeup done, my old work handbag, going to get the train, going to this job interview and then sitting there being like, this is not me. Like, it was just so bizarre. It was just this, the old outfit, the old mentality, the old handbag of like who I used to be as Liz that wasn't a mum. And then suddenly being in this school, being in an interview and the head teacher being like, so tell me about yourself. And I'm like, so I have a boy, a little boy who's called Henry and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, well, that's not me. That's not about myself. That's about my son. But I do honestly feel like Henry and I are literally like one entity. And it's only very recently that I've started to sort of peel myself away and be a little bit more me, like a new-ish version of who I am, you know. And that was such an interesting experience because there wasn't really much phone signal in the school and that really freaked me out because I was like, what happens if Henry's unwell? But I also really enjoyed myself. And I was so chilled at this interview. Honestly, I was like sat there. I think the other candidates were like, who's this crazy woman? And then, you know, I got lunch that was like made for me. And there was this like amazing salad bar and a cheese thing and whatever. It was a posh school. And they were like, I'm so sorry to rush you, but we need to do this part of the interview. And I'm like, I've just had a 23-minute lunch. That is not rushed. Like, that is lush. Like, honestly. And I think that process of like stepping out from being Henry's mum and going back to like who I was before, and it's a completely different role to before, it was so telling and it was an amazing experience. And I didn't get that job. And in a way, I was sort of glad because I didn't want to be out of the house. I'm not ready for it yet. So I now work at a completely online school. And it's just working perfectly for where I am in my life at the moment. But I had to sort of step outside of my comfort zone to learn that, I think.
Yeah, but I think I'm aware that this isn't possible for everybody, but I think even those little snatched moments are so important. And I think as mums, and definitely of mums with children with a lot of needs, I think you can feel really guilty about going, well, actually, I want to do this. I don't want to be in the house now. I want to go and do something for me. I want to put headphones in or go to a Pilates class or go and have lunch with a friend or something. And you know, I think if you can, it's incredibly important to have something that is just for you, not you as a mum.
I think it is. I know it is, but it's also really hard.
Yeah.
And I had this conversation with some other friends recently. Like, we should only do things if we're going to enjoy it. Like, if we're going to sit there thinking, I'm an hour away from my kid and that's stressing me out, like if something goes wrong, or actually, this is not what I want to do with my time. I want to be in the same house, but having a bath, basically. And I was like, it's really important that we don't just decide, right, we've got to be social, we've got to do this. If it's not going to serve you, let's not do it. And it's the same like when Henry's in hospital. So Henry spends a lot of time in hospital. He's had two big surgeries. Well, one's a small surgery, but it ended up being bad. And he's had open heart surgery. And then he's just in hospital all the time with a respiratory condition, respiratory illness. And in the winter, autumn, when Henry was in for like almost 6 weeks, this is the first time that my husband and I have really had to sort of tag team, and it a lot of me giving, like letting go so much more, to the point that for the first time he slept in the hospital. Because I was working, I was like, I can't sleep here. And then even though I'm working in online school, I can't go and teach these kids for 6 hours and then come back. And that was the first time that I've had to walk out of the hospital while he's unwell. He wasn't like critically unwell at that point, or like acutely unwell. When he was like in HDU, I just didn't work. But that sort of whole process of knowing that Matt's there with Henry, I can come home, I can, there's no one else in the house. Like I am never in the house on my own ever, because we've always got carers now. So like, not always, but you know, it's just never just me. And I've had a few moments, and this sounds bizarre, but I've had a few moments where I've sat on the sofa, house empty, Henry's in hospital, I've had a pizza, I'm having a glass of wine, and I'm like, this is actually nice. And I need this. Like, I need to recover. I need to restore. I need to just be, it's like the worst phrase ever, be kind to myself. But it's so true. I need to be kind to myself. Have a bath. And then the next day I might be working, and then I might be in hospital that next evening. But I go back. I'm still exhausted, but I feel refreshed mentally, I think, because I've done something for myself. And to some people that might look like that's not self-care at all. But at that moment, that's exactly what my brain and my body needs. And it just does the right thing. And rather than like beating myself up about always having to be in hospital, always having to be by the bedside, always having to be the person that's there for morning ward rounds, I'm now starting to say, okay, let's prioritize, because sometimes ward rounds don't happen till 2 p.m. And then you've literally wasted a whole day where, you know, you could be going for a walk with a dog, or like, I love cooking. So I come home, I cook, listen to the radio. That just makes me happy. And then I go back as a better person, a better mum and a better wife, and I'm happier. So yeah, finding that time is just... And doing what you want to do in that time, I think, is so important.
I think you're spot on with what you said about don't do something because you feel like you should. It's picking the thing, isn't it, that's going to recharge you, fill up your cup, whatever that is. Like you said, even if it's just sitting on your own, not talking to anyone and having a glass of wine or, you know, a dog walk. But it's just, it's about not feeling guilty about that, because I think it's interesting what you just said about being there for every ward round and trying to let go of that. I almost feel like, and this might not be how you feel, but it's almost like that societal expectation of like, well, you're their mum. People are going to think badly if you aren't there. Well, actually, they're not. Like, your Henry has two parents. Yeah. You have a husband. You are 50% responsible for him, and that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And actually, it's been a great thing for my husband as well to have that ownership, rather than me always chipping in and then him saying, and he's, you know, he will catch different parts of the conversation and he'll question different things that my brain doesn't necessarily do. And I think it's actually really helped our relationship in a way, to for me to let go of that and for him to have that ownership. And it's definitely helped him just feel more comfortable and confident in the hospital because I've let him. And they've had some amazing times, like, because we were in for ages. I came back on a Saturday afternoon and I'd been to a yoga class, and they were watching the football and they were sat in bed together. And I was just like, okay, it's boys' time now. You don't need me. It was just really, really nice. So, yeah. And that's something that, again, I wouldn't have been ready to do that a year ago. It just had to happen, like, naturally and organically.
It's also that mental load, isn't it? You know, you were saying that you've let go of having to do every email, all of the paperwork, all of, the, you know, to keep up, because that's a lot, let's face it. I mean, I have that a lot. I'm not going to pretend that mine is the same as yours, because it's absolutely not. But on top of just living, I always think this, right? You know, we're a family of five in our house. So there is overflowing washing all the time. You know, you need to do a food shop. You need to think about what you're having for dinner. You need to clean the house. You need to take the dog out. Just life is a lot.
Yeah.
Being a mom on top of that is a lot. And then being a mom to a child who has all this extra things that you need to do, whether that is the, you know, the physio or the appointments, or whether it's emails or letters, like, bloody hell. It's a lot.
It's a lot of a job. Like, I literally need a PA for Henry, and I still do a lot of the admin. And the one thing we're going to do next, actually, we've got our shared Google calendar. If it's not in the calendar, it does not happen.
Yeah.
We've got a spreadsheet that has the care on for the month that we can access that goes in the calendar. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to have an email address for Henry, and we're going to change over all of the professionals' emails. So it doesn't just come to me. It goes to Henry's email, and then we can choose when we access that email, and then we can share who, you know, who deals with it, basically. Because I get all these emails day in, day out from all the different professionals, agency, blah, 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 and it's all held by me. So that's the one thing. I know that will take a long time to move over to that. But that's a piece of advice from a mum who's got a child who's, like, much older than me. And she also has, you know, a diary where it's like, this is my time when I'll deal with the admin, and then this is my time when I'll be mum. So I think that could be something that might work.
That's such a great piece of advice, because I think if you are the person that's getting all the emails, it's still like you're still having to say to your husband, or, you know, whoever else it is, if you're listening in this situation, if you have got somebody to help you, you're still going, right, this has come to me, but please could you do this? And then, I don't know if you're the same as me, but then naturally I'll be like, have you done it?
Yeah.
When are you going to do it? What did
you
they say?
So, why not? I would have done it already. Why have you not done it?
Exactly.
Why have I done it myself?
And then, so I think even by us having to ask somebody else to do it, it's still on your list, and it's not ticked off in my head until I know that somebody else has done that, and they've done it right, and I know what they said and what the response was.
And that's it. And
I love that.
I don't want to become an absolute control freak unless I already have done. But I think sharing load is going to be the solution to that. Yeah.
But what a brilliant way of actually putting that into practice, because I think sharing the load is something that's really easy to say. But that's a really practical way of saying, well, this is how you share the load, isn't
it? Yeah. And we're not there by any stretch. Like, tomorrow when I'm working, I will still be making dinner. I won't do the laundry. I don't do laundry because I
love that.
I always put the wrong stuff in and then things go pink. but, you know, I'll still be doing loads and loads of other stuff, but I won't do all of Henry's stuff when I'm working.
Yeah.
And that is a relief, actually.
Just before we wrap up, I'd just be really interested to know, because there's obviously a big problem with parents. I'm going to generalize and say mums here being able to work and also to care for their children. And one of the reasons because of that, and I've spoken to so many mums who have this exact issue, is they'll be going to work, their child has a nursery place, and you get the call, they're not well, you're going to have to come and pick them up. And obviously that isn't very conducive to having a great workplace relationship when you're constantly like, sorry, I've got to leave again. So you obviously mentioned that the job that you're doing now, you applied for that job after having Henry.
Yeah.
Can I just get you to just briefly kind of how, like, did you have to mention that in the interview, and how have they been since then? Because yeah, I'd imagine definitely. There are times where you have to say, I can't work now, sorry.
Yeah. So I've done 2 years self-employed and then as a tutor. And I think I've built up what works through that. So every single time I take on a student, I'll say to the parents, this is my situation. This is my little boy. There will be times I'm in hospital and I will have to cancel last minute and we will have to rearrange at a weekend. And I'm so sorry, but if you want your child to work with me, this is how it's going to be. And every single, and it is normally the mums, every single mum has just been phenomenal. Like one of them like dropped off some wine for me. Like, I know. So that's sort of the way that I work with my sort of private tutoring. With the school, hasn't really happened yet because I only started there in the autumn and I was so lucky that they didn't actually have enough lessons for me. So they were like, can you do all this admin and all this marking? And I'm like, yeah, sure. But you can do it in your own time. And they also knew that Henry was unwell and HR rang me one day. And they were like, don't worry, you're not in trouble. And I remember being like, I know I'm not in trouble. Like my son's in intensive care. Like, of course I'm not in trouble. You know, and I think it's that whole thing of HR, isn't it? Like HR is actually there to support you, hopefully. And I explained the whole situation and said, you know, I am planning to go back to work next week, just the one day, because my other day is an admin day. If it doesn't happen, it could be really last minute. And they were like, okay, fine. But I think the job that I've got works really well with our situation because it's an online school and everything is already planned ahead of time. Everything is on a system. So if a lesson goes down or the internet goes down or someone's ill, there's always a teacher that can be in there and cover, and the lesson is already there and planned so it can be followed. So I think it's almost the ideal job for now. Long term, it's not going to be, and long term, we both need to work. But this is sort of fitting in with life at the moment, if that makes sense. However, Henry isn't at nursery full time, and he won't be. He only has like 3 hours a morning for like 2 days a week. If he starts school in September or when, I don't know how we're going to manage that. So there's a lot of like ifs and buts and maybes, but I actually have said to my current boss, I'm interested in taking on another day for next year, actually after Easter. And I was like, oh, do you know my situation? Yeah. No, I know it all. Like, well, she didn't say it like that, but she's like, no, of course I've read up about your situation. She said, look, if it doesn't work out, there's actually a parent, a teacher that's in a really similar situation to you. She just dropped down. She dropped down by one day and then she went up by half a day. And if that's what you need, Liz, that's what you can do. We're all about flexibility. So that's, I guess, a really positive thing. We'll see if it works out that way. And I don't know what we would do. I don't know. I think everything has to be so flexible.
I think it's really nice, though, to hear, certainly for now, a positive story about a workplace being accommodating and being flexible like that, because I don't think that that's the norm yet, unfortunately. And I know there are brilliant people, Anna Whitehouse being one of them, not necessarily in the SEND space, but campaigning, you know, for it to be more accessible for just mothers in general to work. So actually, I think it's really nice to hear a positive story like that. And I'm glad that, you know, certainly for now, that is working for you.
And that's really nice to hear. That I know will be flexible and online for now, I think, or hybrid. Yeah. I think that's the only thing I can do for now.
So Liz, I finished the podcast in the same way with the same two questions. I feel like you might have already answered one of these. So if this would be your answer, that's fine. What is the best piece of advice that you've been given so far? But do you know what? If it's the email, that's unreal advice. I love that.
Not done it yet, but yeah, I'm going to go with that because otherwise when it's like take time for yourself or no, do what your body wants you to do. Like when people are saying, come to a gym class and it's the worst thing you want to do and you actually just want to have a big glass of wine, do that. Like do what your body wants and needs. And as much as sometimes people are really trying to be kind and give you advice, sometimes you know that's not what you need and just stand up for yourself basically. Yeah.
That's probably just good life advice in general, true. I'd say, to be honest. And then my final question is, what do you know now that you wish you'd known when you got Henry's diagnosis?
That you've got more than a year, I guess. Like, that well, year is not, I don't know. I don't know. Because I can't say that it'll all be okay. I can't say that you'll make it work, but...
You're right, though. It's like having higher hopes than what people are telling you should have, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I just, like, the love that I have for Henry is just insane. Like, that is what makes it all doable. So I think that really, like, you will manage. It will be really hard. But just go back to, and I think, when things are tough, just, like, narrow everything down. Just chuck out all the unnecessary stuff that you don't need to do. And just be your, that's what we do, just be your little tiny unit, and then you can get by for that period of time, and then you can start to open up again. But don't be afraid to do that, like, literally everything go out the window.
I love that. Now, you post gorgeous videos of you and Henry doing all kinds of things. I love the video of him with the, to be honest, if that toy, that duck toy was in my
house,
I would have thrown that out the window. But there's some great, there's even some great videos like of chest physio ideas. Yeah. You know, if you're listening and you have to do chest physio, the one of you bouncing on the ball.
But that was amazing. Yeah.
You're sharing some really lovely content on your Instagram. Where Thank can you. People find you if they want to follow you?
Medical_mama_kicking_cask.
I will make sure that that's in the show notes. Is there actually, I should start asking people this more, is there somewhere a good resource that people could visit if they want to find out more about this, you know, rather than your generic Google and possibly it gives you something from 1958 that's not been updated yet?
There's a charity called Unique who have created like little leaflets that outline different conditions, and they've done one on Henry's condition where it's really separate, like this affects girls, this affects boys, it could do this, it could do that, and they're someone that I really want to do more stuff with. So Unique, I've heard do some really great sort of resources.
Amazing. I'll put the link for them in the show notes as well, so that people can, you know, do a little bit more reading and stuff, because ultimately, you know, raising awareness of all of these different things that fall under that SEN umbrella, I feel is really important.
Definitely.
And I think it's also very important to not just know things about what your child's going through. You know, since doing this podcast, I've learned so much from other parents about something that is never going to affect me, but it's information that I'm really glad that I now have.
Yeah, definitely. Just more understanding. And then you might meet someone else and you can go, oh, I've heard this. And the network is just phenomenal. And I think Instagram is so helpful as well, just for asking questions and people just every day being like, you've got this, you're doing a great job, or Henry's hair looks crazy today, why have you cut it, or whatever. It just, it helps, doesn't it? Yeah.
I completely agree. Liz, I'm so happy we finally managed to get together and record this podcast. Thank you so much.
It's okay. It's lovely to meet you. And yeah, it's been great. Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat as much as I enjoyed having it. Firstly, I really like Liz. She was super easy to talk to. And like I said to her, I think it's always really, it's beneficial to our whole community for us to learn more about, you know, the challenges that other mums are going through, and to learn more about, you know, rare genetic conditions like the one that Henry's got. I mean, the fact that she was told that he was only one of seven boys in that. Did she say the world? I feel like she did. Sorry, my head has gone today because Leo's unwell. It's just crazy. So I think it's really great to be able to raise awareness, share information, and for us all to learn from each other as well. So once again, thank you so much to Liz for being so patient with the amount of times we have had to reschedule this recording. But, you know, that's just mum life, isn't it? As I always say, I would really appreciate it if you're enjoying the podcast, if you could rate and review, but most importantly, subscribe. So that doesn't cost anything. It's like the follow button. It works differently on different podcast apps, but I'm sure you'll be able to find it. I'd really appreciate it because it helps more people to find the Send Mum Club, which ultimately is the goal. That's it from me, and I'll be back next week with another fabulous guest for you.